America Looks Abroad. This is the 34th in a series of broadcasts presented by the staff members of the Foreign Policy Association. Today's subject is the fate of the British Dominions. The speaker is Mr. James Frederick Green, a research associate of the Foreign Policy Association. Mr. Green.
Good afternoon. This past week has been one of preparation. Germany and Italy are preparing to invade and conquer Great Britain. Britain is preparing to defend itself against assaults by sea and air. It is preparing for combat in the British Isles themselves. The British Navy attacked and sank French warships at Oran on Wednesday and finished off the battleship Dunkirk yesterday. During this week of preparation, we have seen unmistakable signs of the tremendous struggle that lies just ahead. Night after night, day after day, German airplanes have been bombing military objectives in the heart of England. All week, too, British planes have roamed across Nazi Germany and over German bases along the whole west coast of Europe. These aerial bombardments are merely the preliminary phase of the Battle of Britain. We cannot yet estimate their effect upon either side, nor can we predict the outcome of the new battle that is beginning. Germany, for the first time in history, is in a position to strike a death blow at the British Empire and to destroy British sea power. Whether Chancellor Hitler, who was welcomed yesterday in Berlin as a conquering hero, can accomplish his greatest objective and end Britain's world power and prestige may be revealed in the next few weeks or months. There is one aspect of this impending attack on Britain that especially concerns the United States. This question is, what will be the fate of the British Dominions? In case Germany should defeat Britain in the near future, what happens to Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa? Canada comes within the Monroe Doctrine, and we have specifically guaranteed its territory against attack. Both Australia and New Zealand seem rather remote to most of us, but they are an integral part of the whole Southeast Pacific area, comprising the Philippines, Singapore, and the Dutch East Indies, where we have political, economic, and naval interests. The Union of South Africa guards one gateway into the South Atlantic, where the routes to South America are of great concern to us. Of these four British dominions, Canada, from our point of view, is the most important. Canada stretches for 3,000 miles across our undefended northern boundary. Its coasts extend northward from our own and border the shortest sea and air routes to both Europe and Asia. Any European or Asiatic power in control of Canada could wage war against the United States and invade our own territory. For that reason, we have always included Canada within the Monroe Doctrine, at least by implication. We have never had to invoke the doctrine, because there has never been any question of transferring Canadian territory to a foreign power. But just in order to make our position perfectly clear, President Roosevelt in August 1938 reaffirmed the Monroe Doctrine as regards Canada, and declared that we would not stand idly by if Canada were attacked. There certainly can be no doubt in our mind, or in the mind of any foreign government, that the United States would defend Canadian territory in order to safeguard its own territory. So much for the strategic issue. We also have a very large economic stake in Canada. Our investments there total $4 billion, and over one-fourth of this total is in government securities. American-controlled companies or American-affiliated companies account for one-quarter of Canadian factory production. Canada is our second-best customer and buys almost $500 million worth of American goods every year. Canada is also the largest single supplier of our market. It sells us over $330 million worth of goods every year. Our national economy and the Canadian national economy are bound together by a whole network of investment, industrial, and commercial relations, banking, insurance, communications, and tourist trade. If the bombs of some European or Asiatic power fell upon Canadian soil, they would damage or destroy American as well as Canadian property. That's another very strong and rather obvious reason why we apply the Monroe Doctrine to our northern neighbors. But the problem is not merely one of invoking the Monroe Doctrine or waiting until invasion actually takes place. Canada happens to be the only independent nation in the Western Hemisphere now at war with Germany. It has sent two divisions of troops to Europe and is training two more. It is training pilots and sending them abroad. Canada's ships are patrolling home waters and fighting in the English Channel. The whole Canadian economy is being mobilized for war purposes. But while Canada is striking at Germany, Germany cannot strike back at Canada, not while the Monroe Doctrine stands in the way. So there arises the problem for the United States. Of course, if the British win this war, our relations with Canada will not be greatly altered. But there would be a change if Great Britain were defeated, or if a prolonged stalemate were to persist. Under such circumstances, Canada would introduce many new issues into our foreign policy. It's important, therefore, that we look ahead and size up the situation. Let's suppose for the moment that Germany successfully invades Britain this summer. Two things might happen as a result. If the British government surrendered, Canada would have to decide whether it would or could continue the war from the periphery, so to speak, whether it could carry on the fight from this side of the Atlantic. Or the British government might leave the British Isles and go on fighting in the New World, as Prime Minister Churchill says it will go on fighting. If that should happen, Canada as an independent country would be free to decide its own future, to decide whether it wanted to invite the King and the British government to Ottawa. Canada might decide to do that, or it might decide not to risk its security and national unity by assuming responsibility for the whole empire. It might prefer to throw in its lot with that of the United States. Some Canadians might welcome such a status. Others would strongly oppose it. While we usually think of Canada as an Anglo-Saxon country, slightly less than half its population is actually of Anglo-Saxon stock. 30% of Canada's inhabitants are French Canadians, who have opposed any military commitments in Europe and have opposed conscription. The Canadian government maintained voluntary training until only a few weeks ago. Then it introduced compulsory training, but only for home defense. For the past 20 years, Canada has developed what might be called a North American outlook, and at London and Geneva, it has expressed a North American point of view. Canada has led the movement for dominion independence within the British Commonwealth, and it has acted in most respects as a completely free and sovereign nation. In case Great Britain should be defeated, Canada's decision would immediately involve us. Our government and the Canadian government would have to confer and to work out something like a common policy. For example, the two countries would have to decide whether to accept a complete Nazi triumph over all of Europe, and whether to reach an understanding with the Hitler government. It would be very dangerous for Canada to go on fighting alone and provoking German retaliation. If Canada and the United States should decide to continue the war, they would then have to coordinate their economic mobilization and defense program. The American government is now engaged in an exchange of notes with Germany regarding the Monroe Doctrine, and is trying to explain and to underline our demand that no territory in the Western Hemisphere be transferred to a country outside the hemisphere. Perhaps we might solve the problem of French and Dutch possessions in the Western Hemisphere by inviting, or allowing, Canada to occupy and hold them for the duration of the war. Canada is already undertaking the defense of Newfoundland, a British Crown colony, and the two French islands, Saint-Pierre and Miquelon, in the Gulf of the St. Lawrence. Canadian troops are reported to be holding Greenland and Iceland. One interesting suggestion along these lines has been made by the Chicago Tribune, the second largest newspaper in the United States, and an ardent advocate of isolationism. The Chicago Tribune suggests a military alliance between Canada and the United States, purely for common defense of our shores. Under such an alliance, we would not assume any obligation for fighting in Europe, nor would Canada assume any obligation for supporting our interests anywhere but in North America. There is one step which we might well take immediately, no matter what happens in the British Isles this summer, and no matter what decisions are taken at Ottawa. We ought formally to renounce any desire for annexation. All through the 19th century, our relations with Canada were jeopardized by careless talk about annexation. For a generation now, that issue has been dead, and it should remain dead. While there is no possibility whatever of annexation, there is a possibility of even closer relations between Canada and the United States in case Britain should be defeated or seriously weakened. In that event, Canada would probably, in self-defense, draw closer to the United States and to the Western Hemisphere system. Canada heretofore has remained completely aloof from the Pan-American Union and from most Western Hemisphere activities. It would be a welcome member of the Western Hemisphere community. On the economic side, we ought also to face the future realistically, no matter how unpleasant it may seem. The United States government is already working on an elaborate plan for an inter-American marketing board. This board would control the foreign trade of the entire Western Hemisphere and deal directly with Nazi Germany on behalf of the United States and the Latin American republics. It would have to buy up large export surpluses throughout the Western Hemisphere and either dispose of them in the United States or sell them abroad. If Canada were to come into such an inter-American marketing scheme, its export surpluses would also create immediate difficulties. Canada is one of the most important trading countries in the world, and its farmers, miners, and businessmen depend upon selling their goods abroad. In addition to their exports to the United States, the Canadians sell over $580 million worth of goods to other countries, chiefly to Great Britain. Its vast surpluses of wheat and flour, bacon and ham, cheese, wood pulp, newsprint, lead, aluminum, zinc, and nickel would have to be taken over by this proposed Inter-American Marketing Board if the Western Hemisphere were to present a really united front against a completely Nazi Europe. So much for Canada. Two other British dominions deserve a brief word. Both Australia and New Zealand would be in grave danger if Great Britain were defeated this summer. Unlike Canada, they do not have the United States next door. They have Japan to the north, proclaiming its own Monroe Doctrine. Over Southeast Asia, some people are proposing that the United States assume responsibility for defending not only Canada, but Australia and New Zealand as well. Obviously, such a proposal depends entirely upon our Far Eastern policy as a whole. We have only one navy, and we cannot operate in both the Pacific and Atlantic at the same time. If the British Navy were destroyed, scuttled, or surrendered, we should have to bring our Navy back to the Atlantic and retreat as gracefully as possible from the Far East. No one can predict what the next few weeks will bring, or whether the Battle of Britain will, like the Battle of France, end quickly in a Nazi triumph. If British sea power should collapse as speedily as the Maginot Line, and if Britain should capitulate as hastily as France, then we would face a strange new world. The disappearance of the British Empire would leave quite a vacuum for someone to fill. It would leave a good many problems on our doorstep. Foremost among those problems would be the fate of the British dominions, especially Canada. Whether we like it or not, we may have to concern ourselves with safeguarding these dominions in order to safeguard our own vital interests.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Mr. James Frederick Green, a member of the Research Department of the Foreign Policy Association, speaking on the subject, The Fate of the British Dominions. This program today was the 34th in a series of broadcasts presented by the staff members of the Foreign Policy Association. If you would like a free copy of Mr. Green's talk, send your request to the Foreign Policy Association at number 8 West 40th Street, New York City. I'll repeat that address carefully for you. Number 8 West 40th Street, New York City, the Foreign Policy Association. It is a nonpartisan organization open to all who are interested in American foreign policy. It offers accurate information on current world events. In the world of today, foreign affairs are your affairs. We invite you to tune in next Sunday to hear another speaker in the series America Looks Abroad. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.